of cream, red roses too.
Hi, this is Ed Cohen, editor of Global Business News, and your broadcast host, Global Radio Talk Show, coming to you today from San Diego, California. Very special guest today is Mr. Sid Forrest, Vice President, Human Resources for Enesis Corporation. Hello, Sid. Welcome.
Hi, Ed. It's good to have the chance to talk.
I'm just delighted and honored to have you and Enesis on this show. I'd like to have a bit of a conversation with you about the company and about 2015 and your objectives in the job. But Sid, you were born in the UK, but now you head up HR for a global US public company. Tell us about yourself and where you're from.
Well, Ed, yes, I was born in Scotland. My father was Scottish, my mother was English, but we moved to the south of England when I was one, so I never really got the Scottish accent. Went to school in Bournemouth on the south coast of England, and my father died very suddenly just before I went to university. So I went to Reading University, which was probably 80 miles from home, which was good for my mother to be that near. I studied physics. I got a bachelor's in physics, a master's in applied physics, both at Reading University. And then coincidentally, I end up here in Reading, Pennsylvania. And then I went on to Oxford University to do a postgraduate in education before starting life in teaching.
Yes. And so in your earlier days, you were a teacher. And what kind of teaching?
Yes, I did. And I'm passionate about sport, particularly soccer and cricket. Now, I know cricket's not a game we play here in the US, and I believe those have influenced my career path. When I was at university, I was fortunate. I played in the England colleges and university soccer team for 3 years as a goalkeeper, and was looking for a school to teach at, and near a team called Wycombe Wanderers was playing. So I went into teaching as a sort of physics professor, taught for many years, became deputy principal of a large school in England, before I moved into industry.
Did you work in the energy business when you were in England?
Well, I started in the controls industry. As I said, I think my career was determined by sport in a way, because I'd applied as a deputy principal. I'd applied for my first job as a principal of a school, didn't get it, and saw an advert on the sports page of one of the national papers at the head office of World Cricket, which is Lord's in the middle of London, and put in for that job. Not really thinking I ever wanted to leave teaching, but was offered the job. But in the meantime, the chairman of the board of the school, who was also a local CEO in the controls industry, heating, ventilating, and air conditioning, heard that I could be leaving education and offered me a job in the industry. So no, it was heating, ventilating, air conditioning to start with. And I went in as a technical training manager, training all the field engineers and setting up a customer training department. So that's how it started. But that was a UK company. We were acquired and became more of a European company. And by that time, I was moving more away from technical aspects into more human resources. And I was given some human resource responsibility. We were then acquired again and became global with a company called Invensys. And that was a global position for me based in the UK. But then we were acquired by Enesis in 2002, and that's when I came to the U.S. to head up HR for Enesis.
Now, in your role in Enesis, in HR, you are in a senior position, and I know from reading the company has been on a merger and acquisition binge. So tell us a little bit about your role in the M&A process, and I think our audience is really going to like that, because a lot of our listening audience around the world are senior level HR, and they have to deal with the challenges of M&A, particularly planning for integrating cultures, business cultures, never mind other cultures. But you have a lot of depth on this. So tell us about you and the HR role, but really as an M&A advisor.
Well, yes, we've been highly acquisitive as a company. You know, Enesis really was a new company founded in 2000 when five people did an MBO. They acquired the company, which I said I was VP of HR from, in 2002, and then went on the New York stock market in 2004. Well, in the last 10 or 12 years, we've made 31 acquisitions globally, taking us into all sorts of new countries, India, Australia, Japan, Singapore, Malaysia, out in Asia, all around Europe, so Bulgaria, Russia, Tunisia, can go on South Africa, Morocco, and so on, and also into South America. So that's been a great challenge for our HR, because in a lot of those countries, we've had no HR people or no HR experience. I'm really fortunate, Ed. I've got a great HR team globally, very professional, very lean team, but very committed. And what is really important is that you have to be there right from the start of any potential acquisition. I think it's important, and it's great being part of the Enersys team that does that, because immediately there's any potential acquisition we're looking at, we're involved immediately. And I think that's absolutely critical to starting off in the due diligence process, which we're extremely thorough on. So it's getting involved at the start, knowing why we're doing it. We're a battery manufacturer, industrial batteries, as you know, and that could be, why are we making this acquisition? Is it to build on our core lead acid foundation? Is it geographic expansion? As I said, a number of those countries, the reason why we've gone into those, it could be operational cost reduction, or taking us into new technologies or allied businesses like chargers for the batteries or enclosures that the batteries sit in. So it's important we know why we're looking at that acquisition. And the main reason is to make money. Unashamedly, that is the reason we're looking, why we've grown the company, in looking after our shareholders and customers. But it's to make money, but to make money ethically. It's so, so important to be involved right from the beginning of that process.
What about the role of governance during M&A? So many things can go wrong. How does the role of corporate governance, code of ethics or code of conduct, is there such a thing in M&A?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, as a company, as I say, yeah, we want to make money, but we do business very ethically. Ethics is important. We have a code of conduct, one code of conduct globally, and when we make an acquisition, that's almost one of the first things we're doing with the team we acquired, going through our code of business conduct and ethics. Because as a U.S. public company, doing business the right way is so important. It's so important anyway. So yes, to be involved with that, it doesn't matter whether it's in whichever country it is, we have one ethics policy. And we train people on that every year, and we get senior managers to sign off on that, to say they're aware of it, they're conforming with it, they're up to speed with it all, and the people who report for them. So absolutely right, in everyday business, but also, as I said, right from the start of any acquisition we make.
If I can jump aside for a second, with respect to engagement with employees across so many borders and cultures and time zones, tell us how you get engagement going between the employees so that the employees get into the idea of many cultures, one company but many cultures, many voices, many attitudes, many traditions.
Culture is so important, as you say, and I think within Enersys, we have a very strong, sensitive recognition and respect for the many different country cultures, and there can be different cultures within one country. So there's huge respect for that, but we try and drive one business culture across the world. Our vision statement talks clearly about a phrase, it's a catchy phrase we use about easy to do business with. We want to be easy to do business with internally between departments, there's no barriers, but with our customers. And it's that really is one of our foundations on how we get engagement, by trying to drive this idea of one global team, or 9,500 people as we now have. We've grown, as I said, incredibly from probably 2,000 about 12 years ago to 9,500. So that's big challenges there, driving the global team. And our chairman and CEO will talk about Ed, an environment which we want to follow everywhere of constructive conflict. And we don't want people just agreeing. We want people to put forward their views and challenge, but in the right way. So people who just want to be destructive, they're just not welcome in our organization, however good they are. So, you know, it's easy to do business with a global team, constructive conflict.
Sounds like it's family-oriented, too, that you manage work-life balance throughout your organization. Is that correct?
We try to. And, of course, in different countries, you know, that's looked on in slightly different ways, but that's very, very important. You know, looking after our employees, say, huge focus on our shareholders and customers. But, again, I think when we're asked, why do we think we're the global leader, it's because of our employees. They make us number one. And also, getting our employees engaged with the community, encouraging people, whether they're coaching teams, whether they're getting involved on non-profit board, working with, in the US, for example, with organizations like United Way, that's really important. You know, engaging with the community for our people, along with that work-life balance that we're talking about.
So retention is key, and part of that is compensation and rewards. Would you like to address that issue, some of the HR people initiatives you have driven to help achieve aligning teams, aligning with the business strategy and your people policy?
You're right, Ed. That's so important. And as you can imagine, having made acquisitions in so many different countries, you know, we now have employees in near enough 40 countries. But what we've been working very hard on in recent years is to align completely our compensation strategy with our performance management strategy. And it's important to start at the top, the alignment of senior managers globally, and drive that down. So if I could give you an example, Ed, we've got our management incentive plan, which has like the top 250 or so executives and senior management worldwide. That could be our vice presidents, our directors, our plant managers, their reports, and so on. We're all on the same incentive plan. One global measure, one global plan with two global measures, so no individual measures, no regional measures, to try and drive that across the world. So that is very important. But more than that, to drive through the organization that we want to pay for performance. You know, performance is important. We have across the world the same performance management system. We've implemented that, our appraisal performance management system. Yes, we do have force ranking, and we do that for various ways. We can identify the weaker performers with a real challenge then of giving them extra help, you know, performance improvement plans so we can really work with them, but also to identify the high achievers so we can reward those people accordingly, the people who are critical in helping us drive the future of Enersys. You know, we believe we have a very exciting future ahead of us.
When it comes to pay for performance and measuring, to what extent do you apply these to people who go on international assignments? Is there coaching mandated to help measure performance while on assignment to get to a measurable return?
Sure, yeah. You know, we have a number of people on assignment, often in when we've made an acquisition and we need to put some of our people there to start with. Yes, as I said, they're on the same performance management strategy. They'd have clear objectives of why they're there, what they're trying to do. Part of it may be to develop local people. You know, we don't want expats in these businesses all the time by any means, for obvious reasons. So part of the challenge and part of their objectives can be to develop more local people who can then take over the senior positions.
So international assignments are critical to talent development, is that right?
Yes, international assignments are important, but talent development in general. I think we've been very fortunate. You know, we've been growing the business significantly, and that's given great opportunities for people. But yes, it's so important that you keep looking at your bench strength to keep driving the future success of Enersys.
This is fascinating, Sid. I really appreciate you taking this time. So looking ahead now, 2015 and beyond, Enersys is a multi-billion dollar company. So you've got a lot of investment in human capital and succession management. Would you like to discuss that strategy, add some words of wisdom for our senior level listeners?
Well, I certainly don't have a monopoly of wisdom on this, Ed. But yes, succession management is important. And as we were discussing previously, there's been opportunities for people within Enersys to move forward. We want to promote internally. And, you know, we have a sort of a rough rule of thumb that if there's a position and we have an internal who's perhaps a 7 out of 10 and an external candidate who's an 8 or 9 out of 10, the internal will get it every time, because we want to reward people and develop them in the organization. Obviously, if there's a significant gap between the internal and external, then obviously the external would get it. So succession management's important. And again, we try and drive that from the top. Again, I can, of our sort of senior 32 executives, starting with our chairman and CEO, John Craig, down to 32, 26 of those 32 have been internally promoted. Four of the 32 have come in with acquisitions, like myself. I was a vice president when the company I was with was acquired. So of the 32, 30 have either been internally promoted or come in with an acquisition, just leaving two have come in at that level from outside. And what that does, Ed, is that creates opportunities below as well to develop people. You know, you mentioned we are a multi-billion organization. We've grown from probably about 300-400 million to 2.5 billion in the last 10 or 12 years. We have a strategic plan to go to 4 billion. Our aim is by the financial year of 2018 to be a 4 billion acquisition. So we've got a lot of organic growth and some acquisitive growth ahead of us to take us to that 4 billion target.
So just sum up now by telling us about what your product line consists of.
Product line, as I said, we are the global leader in industrial batteries. And really there's three business lines there. There's motive power, and those are the batteries for material handling, essentially the ones that sit on the forklift trucks for material handling. There's some specialty applications in there as well that we deal with. We're not into car batteries, effectively, but although there are some specialty batteries we do, some high-powered batteries for cars. The other line is reserve power, and that's really the backup power for telecom, UPS, utilities. And the third is aerospace and defense. So, for example, we would do quite a lot with the military, certainly in the US. Our tanks, the tank in Iraq, for example, would have had our batteries. We've made some interesting acquisitions recently that have taken us more into the space and medical field. So, for example, astronauts doing spacewalks could have our little batteries on them. Some of the rockets would have be powered by some battery power. And medical, you know, one of our recent acquisitions, a company called Qualion in the US, taken us into the medical field as well, you know, small transplants which need our lithium batteries. So generally three areas, as I said, motive, reserve, and aerospace and defense.
Sid Forrest, thanks very much for being our guest today on Global Radio Talk Show, a service of globalbusinessnews.net. Sid, I invite you to come back and be a speaker and also to be my guest again on another topic in the new year.
Ed, I appreciate the chance to talk to you. Thank you very much, and look forward to speaking to you again. Many thanks, Ed.
Thank you. This is Ed Cohen, signing off from Old Town in San Diego.
Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful